and we've got those three. Sorry, the two at the back of their hands up.
Can you call the South Indian language as general of brevity? How come Telugu, Malayalam, Kannada predominantly emphasized and Tamil was left independent of Sanskrit? But two, if you know, either because or may not be relevant, but whether the Tamil language is older than Sanskrit?
Oh, that's a very difficult question. You see, every language has its own history. Now, when you talk about certain languages being Sanskritized, the Sanskritization of languages takes place at certain points in time, and some get more Sanskritized than others depending on what the cultural milieu is at that time. So that it's not as if in origin certain South Indian languages are more Sanskritized than others. It is a historical process. It is a process of change owing to various features where, for example, you have inscriptions that come from the Chola kings, where the first part is in Sanskrit, which is very florid and describes the glories of the king and the genealogy and the dynasty and so on. And then you come to the crux of the matter, which is perhaps a grant or whatever is being recorded. That is in Tamil. And the same sort of situation you get in inscriptions that come from Karnataka, where you have Sanskrit to begin with and Kannada, which actually contains the meat, as it were, of the inscription. So that the Sanskritization of languages right through the subcontinent is really a historical feature and varies from time to time. As to which is earlier, it would really depend on which phase of Sanskrit you're referring to, because there is the earliest that we know, which is Vedic Sanskrit. Then you get classical Sanskrit. Then you get what is sometimes called neoclassical Sanskrit. So that, you know, again, this is the evolution, the historical evolution of Sanskrit undergoing changes owing to various features. Certainly the literary sources or the oral tradition in Sanskrit as we have it today is older than the oral tradition in Tamil. But that's as far as one can go. Oh, all right, yes.
About most languages, at the time of partition, I think the number was about 25% of the whole population. They were overwhelming the English. Now they are usually two quite opposite ways of two ways of looking at their existence. One is to think that this is a result of forced survival. And the other is to say that this is the result of voluntary survival. And I would say the subject with a certain amount of emotional influence. Is there some kind of an agreement by now among Indians and historians as to what was the dominant trend by which one fourth the population?
I think the way in which you've set it out is historically inaccurate, in the sense that one doesn't talk about is it voluntary or is it forced, because each situation is different. What we tend to say now is, what are the reasons for the conversion? What was it that attracted people to convert to Islam? And the reasons can be very various. Sorry? Yes, all right. Attracted or forced. The reasons vary. Usually at the level of individual conversions, the reasons are very often political, where the individual Rajput converts to Islam. It's usually for some political reason, because he thinks he'll get a political gain out of doing so. At the level of caste, which is where the major conversions took place, and they usually took place through the Sufi Khanqahs, there it's hard to say, because it depends on, again, what was the reason why a particular caste would wish to convert or would be converted. What is the evidence for that?
I don't have any evidence.
No, sure. I mean, obviously there is an element of psychology that if there are people who are ruling that belong to that religion, then particularly people at the lower levels of caste society who are not getting such a nice deal from the existing situation would think that they will be better off in a religion that claims to be egalitarian. Oh, yes, in fact, there is total conversion in other areas. What is so surprising to the Muslims, to the Muslim theologians in India, is that so few local people are converting. This is a matter of surprise that is discussed again and again and again. Because everywhere else that Islam went, like Persia, Afghanistan, Central Asia, large parts of Central Asia, it's mass conversion. Aren't all conversions provoked, induced and suggested? Yes. I mean, you know, why single out one particular religion? This is true of all converting religions. Yeah. Yeah. It depends on the area. One can't generalize for the subcontinent. I mean, the lower castes in Kashmir, for example, accept conversion. Huh? No. The king was never converted. No, much before. Much before. The conversion was much before. So it's not when the king accepts it. And I'm afraid I don't have this faith in everybody does what the king does.
Lower communities have not necessarily happily moved towards accepting conversion. At least in the time of partition UK, that the lower communities of Hindus in the state, back in Bangladesh or Pakistan, represented by and large the lower caste, according to
I'm sorry, you're referring to the lower caste Hindu communities staying back. Okay. But what I'm saying is, in answer to the general question on conversion, that one can't generalize and say all conversions were forced, all conversions were voluntary. One has to look at the specific caste and look at what its role was in the social structure at that time and ask the question, what did this caste gain by conversion? Which is the basic question that needs to be asked. One last question.
You know, you started the series of lectures and you even emphasized the point when you started today that the purpose of historians and the objective of historians is to find out how and why Indian society has changed. So I'd like to come to contemporary India today. And if there is one facet of our society which really stands out, at least in my opinion compared to outside, is the level of corruption that is there in all levels of our society. Can
you,
or do you correlate it with history?
How do you mean correlate? You mean that we've always had corruption as part of our history?
I don't know, I'm not going to bias you.
Yeah, thank you. Did the Muslims introduce corruption? Yeah, well, there is an awareness of corruption. Kautilya, in fact, has a very lovely phrase where he's talking about the administrators going out to collect revenue. And he says, the king must always remember that if you put a drop of honey on somebody's tongue, that person is going to taste the honey.
Okay. And he uses it in the metaphor. He says the government revenue officer is like a fish. You don't know when he is drinking water.
Water, yes, yes. That's another one he uses.
Income tax.
Income tax. Absolutely. Income tax. So I think the consciousness is always there, as indeed the consciousness is there in every system where money is being collected, where wealth is being collected. The question that really needs to be asked is, to what extent in the past did corruption become so much a part of the system of control and the exercise of government as it seems to be becoming now, or has become now? And there I think probably in the past the corruption obviously existed, must have existed, and was probably restricted just to the upper levels of society. My suspicion would be, without having any evidence, because unfortunately we don't have that evidence. I don't know if there is evidence for the 18th century or if those... No, well, 20th century there is evidence. We're very corrupt. Yes, because they actually came out just to make wealth and then go back. So there it was open, absolutely. But even before the 18th century, one suspicion is that, you know, when somebody wanted the right kind of job, and a samant wanted to move up the scale, or a jagirdar wanted something, there would certainly be corruption. But that it should have become so much a part of the whole way of functioning, that is really where one feels that this is a change. And it's a change which is partly perhaps tied into the fact that we went through a process of being a colonial economy, but also partly tied to the crisis of the present day, which is a crisis where...
Isn't the definition of corruption has changed?
Has changed, yes.
If you give money and the job is done, it's not corruption.
It's not corruption.
When you give money and the job is not done.
Right.